Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game. Before we get going, make sure you're subscribed to the show on whatever audio platform you're using and jump over on YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Daily Real Estate Investor. We have shorts coming out daily as well as these podcast episodes on video. Welcome back for another episode of The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. We are excited to be back for our second episode since relaunching the podcast. I got my co-host, Tony, here with me. Tony, what's up, man?
Oh, man, doing good, feeling good. I'm currently in a conference in Virginia, so I'm at the hotel recording this podcast, so feeling good, dude.
That's awesome, man. You? Virginia, how's the conference going?
It's good. It's Dealmaker in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
And a lot of experienced investors here, a lot of net worth in this room.
Sweet. That's the place you want to be. As you guys may know, I'm sure you probably know this, but networking is one of the very best ways to grow your real estate business, and specifically from finding private money, right? Tell Tony, we were talking about this, you know, off the last episode, kind of just we were catching up, but share with the listeners how you found private money the last time you went to this conference.
Yeah, so first thing is to, in a sense, advertise yourself. When you come to these conferences, you have to tell people what you're looking for. Because you have to think about it. When you're looking, a lot of investors who are looking for deals, private money lenders are looking for us. And one of the things that you really have to, make private lenders trust you. They have to see what you do. They have to feel comfortable lending their money to you. So that's one of the things I look for when I come to these conferences, just talk to people. I mean, real estate is a people business. So you have to talk to literally as many people as you can, get them to know you, get them to trust you, get them to know that you know what you're doing, basically. So that's what I look for. I start talking to people. And I know some of us are shy to begin to talk to others, but you're in real estate. If you want to do real estate investing, you have to talk to people. There's no other way around it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the first private money lender I met was when I was invited to Brandon Turner's Real Estate Mastermind, his first real estate mastermind he did in Hawaii. Flew down there, was blown away with the people that were there. I felt like there were a lot of really successful investors. I was just happy to be in the room with them. And I was having a conversation after some of our sessions, just out by the pool, having a conversation with a guy. And he said, what's the biggest bottleneck in your business? And I just said, capital, investing capital. And he said, really? Well, how much do you need? And I was like, I don't know, $200,000. And he was like, done. I'll give you $200,000. And so I was like, wow, that is wild, because my limiting belief that I'd had up until that point was that it's hard to find private money. And that is just not true. It's not hard to find private money. But what Tony just said is really important. They have to trust you. If they trust you and they feel like you're not going to lose their investment, you'll have a lot of people willing to lend you private money. So you got to balance creating credibility with the private lenders and letting people know what you do. That's why social media is good. Get on social media, post your deals, let people know who you are, what you're about, that you're ethical, that you have a set of values you're going to stick to, that you're going to pay them back if they lend you the money. Then you'll have lots of private money available. And that private money that I ended up using really opened up things in my business and allowed us to do a lot more deals at once, which was the bottleneck. So how did you end up using private money in your business, Tony?
So similar to you, in order for you to start the Burr method, Obviously, the house is going to need some work. So that's mostly how I've used private lending in single family area. But before I get deeper into these woods, to piggyback off what you said, you know, conferences like these, they're about 2 to 3 days, sometimes weeks, 1 week long. So you ask yourself, how can this person continue to trust in what I do? And it's like Josiah said, that's where social media comes into play. So one thing that I do after every conference is during the conference, I either follow, add on Facebook, those people that I spoke to, including private lenders. Private lenders, a lot of them are older folks, so they probably have Facebook. So that's the thing I do at all the conferences. And of course, you have to follow up with your deals with that network. And the way you do that is if you're working on a rehab, take tons of pictures of it, put it on Facebook, say what you're doing. If you got a property under contract, post that on Facebook. If you're talking to an attorney, if you meet Josiah, for example, post that, you know, just make that content and people will see, man, this guy is actually making moves. He knows what he's doing. And from there, people are going to just continue to trust you. Because in 3 days, for example, this conference, in 3 days, somebody cannot fully trust me. But after I add them on Facebook, they see what I do. They know my family. They see my wife. It makes a connection. And from there, man, it's that's how I've gotten my last 5 deals I've gotten from private lenders from conferences. And even the mobile home park that we spoke in one of the episodes, all of that was private capital. I had nothing out of pocket. That's the beautiful part about this project. It all came from a connection that started in one of the conferences. And then I ran into the guy again at a different conference. So that relationship matured there and the trust just grew, really.
Yeah, that's amazing. So many good tidbits of wisdom there as far as how to grow your investment business. Establishing trust, letting people know what you're doing. You know, social media, the reason social media is great, there's a lot of negatives to it, but the reason that it's great is that it is a free marketing tool for your business. And you are your business in real estate investing. People are lending you money. Just like if you went to a banker to borrow money on a deal, they're going to first look at you and try to figure out if they think you are the type of person that's going to be able to pay them back. And that has nothing to do with anything outside of, is this person, you know, going to hustle and get this paid back? And they can look at your credit score, obviously. And your credit score tells a lot about your history of your ability to pay things back that you've committed to pay back, right? But there's also another element of your operating history. Like, has this guy, you know, paid back things that don't show up on their credit report? Has this guy borrowed private money before and paid back other private lenders? And that's another thing in the private lending space. If you borrow money from somebody and don't pay them back, that's going to get around as well, because the real estate investing pool is a pretty small circle. So there are people that have taken money from someone and not paid them back that you'll hear about. And it's like, all bets are off. Nobody wants to lend them money anymore. And so just keep your word, pay money back to those that you've borrowed from. But I mean, that's, everyone knows that, right? It seems obvious, but this is a good segue into, let's talk about, since we're talking about private money, let's talk about what you did on your mobile home park deal that you're mm-hmm. currently working on with the private money and how you structured that. Then I'll talk about how I use private money to build my BRRRR strategy portfolio. And then we'll transition into talking about a little bit more about those deals. So let's talk about you said you funded your mobile home park deal with private money. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So initially when we first got it, so this deal came actually from my agent. It was his personal home. And this is when you find a deal, you have to see what does the seller need, really. When we found this deal, he was selling it for $300,000. That was the total price. It was 50 acres. It was a good deal, really, because it had a house already there. And then, you know, obviously 50 acres, that some areas that were completely clear, some that had trees. And when we looked at this, man, if we pay 20% down, which we really didn't have at the moment because our money was tied up in other deals, but it was really a deal that it was hard to pass. So I looked into my agent's public records, And I found out that he built a new house in that same area. And I found the mortgage in the public records. And I saw that he was he owed for that mortgage. He owed $150,000 exactly. So we went back to him and said, hey, look, we can buy. It was a total of five parcels. I told him we can buy three parcels now for $150,000. And we did that with traditional banking. So that way, you know, 20% of 150, that's what we ended up paying for that first one. And then we told him, but let's have a lease option on the other parcels with the option to purchase it within a year. And within that year is when we actually plan to get the funding for this whole project. Because it's hard to see a vision 50 acres develop. So we knew it was going to take some time to find a lending partner. So again, going to conferences throughout this 1 year, and 8 months later, we found our equity partner in this case. And we presented the deal. We presented a beautiful PowerPoint with all the numbers that we knew, with the design that we had already hired out for somebody to create. And we presented him with good data, data around the city as well, demographics, jobs coming in, all the above. And when we presented it to him, you know, we were in kind of negotiations of how much equity is he going to take for the deal. And we ended up partnering. He's going to take a good portion of the equity, and we keep, obviously, the majority of it. And he brings all the money to the deal. And the way we're going to do this is, in a sense, because he's a hard money lender, our equity partner. But, you know, he came in as an individual for the equity. We're going to use his hard money company to lend us the money with all the payments for the next month, year and a half in reserves. So we don't have to make no payments at all. By year and a half, the park should be, if not completed, it should be close to completion. And what we're going to do is we're going to refinance that construction loan and go ahead and now have a regular commercial loan. And that's how we've been actually came out of this deal, literally, for the most part, out of pocket, because we got all our money back once we brought him in the deal and he paid us off for the money that we were in already.
Okay. So let me make sure I'm tracking with this. You bought three parcels yourself, $150K, 20% down. So you put $30K down on that. Then you got an option on the other two parcels, went and found this private money. He said he would put the equity up, and through basically a refinance, he refinanced you out of the three parcels you purchased. You got your cash back on that. Mm-hmm. He put capital in an account to make payments for the next year and a half while you get this thing built. And then he is keeping some equity in the deal. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. As far as the equity, I think this would be interesting to the listeners. How much equity are you incentivizing him with, and how much did you get to keep, if you're willing to talk about that?
Yeah, of course. We gave him 30%. We keep him 70, and that 70, of course, is split between three partners, myself, and other two partners that we found this deal. So, yeah.
Good deal. So he gets 30% equity. He's got interest running on the capital that he's got invested, right?
Correct.
So he's getting 30% equity plus making a return on his private money. So, you know, it's a sweet deal for him. It's a sweet deal for you because you're basically building this deal with none of your own capital. You know, the thing you're giving to him is some equity in the deal, right? You got to incentivize someone to want to come in and take this risk with you. And this is what it took for this investor to want to do this. Now, we talked before about the numbers on this deal, and it was really sweet. Let's talk again. How many lots are there going to be?
Maximum 188. But to stay conservative, I always tell people 160, because, you know, when you're developing a mobile home park, especially, you're going to run into some hiccups. Some soil areas might not work. So I say 160 to be on the safe side. So okay. Yeah, that's how many we have.
So we'll say that you only end up with 160 lots based on soil limitations and whatnot. So for the novices out there, to get your potential gross income or your PGI, you're going to take 160 times your lot rent, And what's your lot rent going to be a month?
325.
So 160 times 325, that gives us 52,000 a month, times 12, that gives us 624,000 a year. Now, this park is only going to be lot rent to the owners. The tenants, you mentioned this in the last episode, the tenants are going to have their own homes, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So when it's tenant-owned homes, the park is not on the hook for repairing any of the homes. The park is on the hook for maintaining the grounds. And what else, Tony?
For us, it's really septics. We own the septics in this case. And then, of course, landscape. Since we're building a community, we do want to maintain, you know, beautiful landscape. Obviously, property management, taxes, and insurance.
Okay.
And in this case, it's just insurance on the land, really. So it's not like a regular property insurance.
Yeah. So what are you calculating as your expense ratio on this? Because expense ratios run lower on mobile home parks if the homes are tenant owned, of course.
Yeah. So from that $624 a year in expenses, we're going to be at around $80,000.
$80,000 on $624. Mm-hmm. So we're saying, what is that, like 15%?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Let's see.
You do the math.
Yeah, it's like 15% is 94,000. So we got 624, and then we'll say times 0.85. That'd be taking out your expenses. You would have $530,000 left of profit. Then you've got the investor. It's 30%, so I'm going to say times 0.7 left over. We've got 371,000 left, and then you've got three partners.
Yep.
And that leaves 124,000 roughly a partner.
Exactly.
So this is and Tony, this is Tony's escape the cubicle, even though he's not in a cubicle technically right now, but escape the cubicle W-2 job plan, which is pretty sweet. So when this thing is done, in theory, Tony will have taken an investor's capital, created $124,000 of passive, quote unquote, passive. You got a manager, passive income for himself. He could get out of the W-2 job, and now he's got total flexibility and total time freedom. And this is why real estate investing is such an awesome thing for your life as far as flexibility goes, which was the ultimate thing for me. I was so miserable in some of these W-2 jobs because I was sitting in a cubicle, I was working really long hours, I wasn't seeing my kids enough, and I was also miserable. Like, I felt miserable in the work. I like the work until I was doing it that much, and it just got to a point where I wasn't enjoying it as much. And also, I wanted to add my own creativity to my deals, and I wanted to add creativity to my job, and I felt like a lot of the jobs I had, it's like, here's what's done here. Do this. Don't ask questions. Don't come up with ideas. Just do this over and over. That to me was really stifling. So this other way of doing things is create the income from real estate investments. It'll get you out of the W-2, and then you can grow your real estate business, right? So Tony, how long do you think this is going to take to get this thing to where you could, in theory, leave your W-2?
It's going to be about 50% occupied until I can say goodbye to my W-2.
Gotcha.
And the reason why I say that, you know, I already have single families that are generating me some income. And once that matches my engineering salary, that's going to be my way out. And it's a transition. You know, we're going to, for example, right now, me and my wife, we're under my insurance. This year, when open enrollment comes up for her job, I'm going to transition into her insurance since she's going to have her W-2 still. Because she still wants to do it. I gave her that's the thing. I gave my wife the option. Hey, if you want, we can get you out first. That way you can take care of the baby. But now she said she wants to. She graduated a year ago and she started her job right away. She said, I want at least 2 years before I can decide if I want to stay or leave my W-2. So I'm going to transition to her insurance and some of the expenses that corporate America pays. We're going to switch to her. And then when salaries match and our income is exactly the same, you know, coming into our bank accounts, that's when I'm going to pull the plug and say, I'm out, corporate America. Here comes financial freedom.
It's awesome, man. I love it. And, you know, you're doing something that my wife and I did, which is I left my job before she left her W-2 job. I left my W-2 job. So when I left, I jumped far before you are. You're doing it in a much safer way than I did. I left because I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I left and started an appraisal business. You know, of course, I was already a licensed agent. I can't remember if it was broker or agent at that point, but so I had income coming in there, and I immediately had income coming in from the appraisal business. So I made less money that first year, but man, my stress level went down so much. And I remember my first year, I think I made $30,000 from my businesses, and I felt great about it. I knew it wasn't much money. At least it wasn't much, you know, compared to some of the jobs I left, but I felt so good about it because I had made that money for myself out hustling. I had made it from starting my own business, and I had made it leaving my W-2 job, and we were able to pay our bills. We didn't rack up any debt, and she still had her W-2. And so, and then my income started going up, of course. And now, praise the Lord, my income is much higher than it ever was at any W-2 job. It's not even comparable. And now she's been able to leave her W-2 job, and we started her own business for her as well. I helped her with that. And now her income has gone way up as well. So, you know, there is a common theme here, which is you're good at something. You can probably make more money by doing that thing for yourself. The question is, do you want to do that thing for yourself? But I'll just give those of you out there that feel like you are stuck in your job. You know, if you are good at photography, for example, you could start your own photography business and probably make a lot of money doing events, weddings, property photos. Heck, we pay our photographer for our cabin, vacation rental cabins, thousands of dollars per session. And you'd think, wow, that's a lot. Well, this girl's really, really good, and your photos are your marketing material there, so it's worth it to us. But you can make a lot of money working for yourself and what you're good at. So you're not stuck. You have options, and building up your passive income is the way to get you out of that cubicle and out doing what you feel like you were created to do. So that's like really exciting.
And let me ask you a question in regards to that. I know a lot of people obviously have that similar story to you, but nobody talks about what did family members think? What did your wife think? Was it like, were there not necessarily arguments, but were there, you know, times where you guys debated whether to do it or not? What was your, what were those voices or those people that were talking when you were trying to get out of the W-2 and go full-time real estate? And similar with your wife, with your spouse, how was that conversation?
I think people that don't see the full picture can think you're a little bit crazy for wanting to leave a secure job when you have, you know, a family and young children and go out and start something that's much more risky. But, you know, my wife always says behavior makes sense in context. And she's a counselor. So she, you know, she talks to people about things like this all the time. But my wife was always 100% supportive. She's never, that's, my wife's amazing in that way. Always supported me, realizes that I have the entrepreneurial DNA. I'm hardwired that way, and that I am like a fish out of water in the other environment. Like I'm much more comfortable not knowing where my next paycheck's coming from and being able to go out there and hustle for it and make it on my own than I am being in this environment where I got to wear a suit and tie every day and sit in my cubicle until my senior manager leaves, you know, because that to me just drives me insane. So she recognized that and knew that I would be in a better place just for who I am if I left. So she you know, and I guess the good thing there is we've always been able to pay our bills, right? So she trusts me that I'm going to go out there and make it happen. And we've always been good. And, you know, praise be to God for that, right? But some of the harder things, this is a great topic, but some of the harder points of feedback came from people outside of my immediate family, friends, acquaintances, especially that see you having a job that was good and leaving it and questioning, like, what is this guy doing? Like, why is he leaving a job that seems awesome? And what is the plan here? You know? And I think people don't see that. They don't see that what you can see in your mind's eye of the vision you have. They just see you leaving something that's good and going off into the unknown, you know? And I think that's the thing that like the entrepreneur has to have that vision in their head that I am going to this place. I know where I am going. I can't see the exact path to get there, but I know it's possible. And I believe in myself enough that I can get there and I will figure it out and I will stick with it long enough to see it to completion. And so, you know, I mean, man, that's probably the thing that I would say you got to have the most is like, you got to have a resilience to people doubting and people, just questioning what you're doing, you know, and saying, oh, poor Sarah, you know, Josiah is striking out on his own again to do this. It's like some people, that's how they were created. I mean, what have your friends and family and acquaintances thought about? I mean, I don't know if you've shared this with them since you've still got, you know, a W-2 job going on, but what about you?
Yeah. So me, I am, people know, I've said it in social media that 3 years ago, I said in 5 years, I'm going to be retiring from the corporate world. And I preach that. I believe it. I see it as a vision. And, you know, sometimes when you believe something, when you say it so many times, it's going to come true just because you truly believe it. So obviously you have, for example, my parents went to college, but my grandparents didn't. And they've been taught that getting a job in corporate is the most secure thing there is. But they fail to realize that you really depend on somebody, because if your boss just doesn't like you, you're probably not going to be there long. So really your life, your family's financials depends on that job, on that boss of yours.
So true.
So my family, is super clear. And a lot of my friends are, of course, there's still, like you said, there's some people that are just, they like to crush dreams. Let's just call them that. And you just have to stand by what you say, you know, say why you believe what you believe. Me personally, I know real estate is rewarding. I'm already living it. It just takes time. You know, it's not a get rich quick scheme. It's something that takes time in order to build your income. But yeah. And then my wife, it's funny because initially it was going to be my wife that we were going to retire. And she was scared because she just graduated college and she was already thinking about leaving. And she was like, man, how do I tell my family this? Like, I worked so hard for this. How do I do this? And it got to the point to where she was like, you know, I'll be free. I'll have more freedom to spend time with the kids. Who can be against that? Who could be against you spending more time with your family? And that's really the way we see it. I mean, we're going to free up our time from corporate America, but we're not going to jump that same amount of hours and work real estate full time. You know, really, in reality, the reason why we jump to, you know, where we're doing real estate is to gain financial freedom. And with that financial freedom, you get a lot of your time back. So when you present it that way, dude, who can be against that? Seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned something that's so true, which is when you have a job, you are like your family's security. Let's say your family's on a one income, you know, setup, and your spouse is at home, you've got children, your job security for those four or five people hangs on whether this specific boss likes you enough.
Yep.
This person could not like the way you look, could not like whatever it is about you. And you could lose your job and your financial security is out the window because of that. And like that to me is far more risky than me having my own appraisal business and out here trying to get banks to put me on their lists. Like that to me is, I have some control over that. Now there may be one bank that doesn't want to put me on their list. Well, how many other banks are there? You know?
Exactly.
So the way I look at this is like, how secure are you in the W-2 job you have? You may think you're really secure, but Apple's firing people right now. Facebook's firing people. Like I read about a guy online who posted on Twitter. He said, you know, please help. I just bought a house last year he's out in California in the San Francisco area. He said, I just bought a house last year. My mortgage is like $10,000 a month. And I just got laid off by Facebook. I've applied to every tech company out here. I'm not getting calls back from anyone. I'm going under financially. It's that easy, right? If you, you know, if he had taken his money and invested in a way that's returning him some cash flow, he got laid off. If he's got 10K coming in, he can still make his mortgage payment, right? Seems obvious now, but we don't know when things in our life are going to happen and we're going to be laid off from our job, or we're going to get injured and we can't go to work anymore. These things happen in life. So I implore all of you to think like that and start planning now when it's not needed. It's like going to get a loan. Banks love lending you money when you don't necessarily need it, right? It's the same with investing. Like, plan. We don't necessarily have to have it yet, because one day when you do have to have it, it'll be there waiting on you. If you wait until you got to have it and you've been fired, it's going to be really hard for you to go start piling up money and building your investment portfolio. And you still can, but it's a lot easier to do it when you've got a job and you can get this ball rolling. So,
right. And I'll add to that. I mean, for everybody listening, our jobs are not secured at all, especially AI coming in,
yeah,
in this world. Dude, there's going to be so many jobs that are going to be lost. So, I mean, nothing is really secure. The only thing secure is the stuff that you can do with, you know, that depends solely on you. Like you were saying, your appraisal business, the spend depends solely on you. And that's a business specifically. That's a business that's always going to require people. And then, for example, I went to Circle K, which is a gas station here locally. And there was a machine. There was nobody there. There was a machine in the front that said, place your items on this, it's like in this box. So I go ahead and, you know, place the items, and it literally aligned the items, what I was purchasing, exactly what it was. And I was like, this is unbelievable. And there was no employee in that gas station. I was like, so there, when you go to a gas station, you see one or two people at the register. And right now that those two jobs are eliminated in all Circle K's. Our jobs are not secure. That's just what I want to relay. So you have to find something that is irreplaceable. You have to find assets that are recession proof, that are going to get you through your difficult times.
Absolutely. AI is Pandora's box. The speed at which AI learns is unbelievable, and it has the capacity to be 1,000 times smarter than any human, even more so. And so what is going to be valuable is going to be, tasks and things that can be done that require the human element, right? That AI literally can't do. Like, AI can calculate a formula and give you, the output for that. And it can, crawl through the internet and give an answer that could be found on the internet. But AI can't provide housing for people, right? Like, someone's got to own the housing. People need a place to live. There's going to be things that are still out there that, that you can make a living from. Now, could AI operate an apartment complex? Sure. Right. But somebody has to still buy that. AI can't just buy it and own it and rent it. Somebody's got to own the apartment complex, right? So be thinking through over the next 20, 30 years, as this stuff, gets smarter and smarter and advances, is your job going to be something that can withstand that? Or is your job one that's in the direct line of being eliminated? And if it is in the direct line of being eliminated, start taking action to get yourself over in a place where you can still pay your bills with cash flow from assets that you've purchased. And that brings me back to this idea. You want to have multiple streams of income. You don't want to have one stream of income, because that's the riskiest way to live, right? Because that one stream gets taken away, you're done. But if these are my streams of income this year. I have royalties from a property I kept, oil and gas royalties. I got paychecks from my podcasting. I've got vacation rental income. I've got my broker income. I've got my appraisal income. And I feel like I'm leaving something out. I feel like there's one other thing that I'm leaving out here. oh, I've got investments. I've got investment income that I'm not even touching right now, but I could. That stuff is going up in value as well. That's like stocks and whatnot. Don't just have one form of income, right? Because if you do, mm-hmm. you could be taken out. So, Tony, what are your thoughts? What's your strategy on building your portfolio and your income streams?
Yeah, so of course, you know, right now is W-2. That's my source, my biggest income coming in. When I leave the W-2, my goal is to, like you said, put my eggs in different baskets. I'm not a huge fan of the stock market, but, you know, if you invest smartly, it's good to have some money in there. Me, real estate, I plan on leaving it at 60% of my investments when I retire. That's where my money is going to go, 60% to real estate. I do like gold. Gold is one thing that I don't think it's ever going to lose its value. You know, it's going to continue going up in value, especially, you know, in inflationary markets like the one we're in now. Gold is just increasing in value. And then I'll be honest, I do believe in Bitcoin. I think, I know crypto is not doing really good at this time, but I think it will continue to go up in value because it hasn't been cracked yet. Nobody has cracked that code. And you have to literally, I mean, maybe that's another topic for another day, but I think that's, it's a technology that is going to continue to go up in value because nobody has cracked it yet. And I don't think nobody will.
Man, I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, but I'm a massive crypto fan. And yeah, I believe in I believe in Bitcoin, I believe in Ethereum and a lot of other ones. And I always tell everyone that asks me about it, don't buy it if you're not okay with it going down 70%. In fact, don't buy it with money that you can't afford to lose, because, you know, some of these things go to zero, right? But again, if you diversify, it's like your income stream. If you diversify your holdings, you know, you take the chance of everything going down to zero way down, right? So just be smart. But there is such an asymmetrical risk reward scenario in crypto, because you're looking at, you know, like Bitcoin, you know, from the peak, 70% downside, 80% downside, but like a 10x on the upside, you know, to what it could do. And it's done far more than that in the past. You know, this year it may be 5x or whatever, but regardless, it's got a much lower downside than it does upside, which asymmetrical risk. I love taking those kind of bets, but that's just, again, like part of my strategy, real estate, investments, income from activities that I take, you know, and so on. So, but anyway, this has been an awesome, awesome episode. I hope you guys have enjoyed this. We're pulling for you to be able to, if your goal is leave your job, we want to help you with that. If you're in a job you love, stay in your job, just plan for a rainy day in case you one day do lose that job, and start building your different income streams. You can do it through real estate. We've done it. That, you know, millions of other people have. It's there for you. It's available for you. Let's talk about our Facebook group real quick, Tony. Fill them in on what they can join there.
Yeah. So we just created our Facebook community, and it's the Daily Real Estate Investor Community. And that's how you'll be able to find us. And again, it's really to create that, in a sense, in-person contact with all of our listeners. We just don't want you guys to see us on a screen or hear us on the car. Josiah and I, the plan is to be actively posting, actively responding. And please, I mean, we look for value. We want to give value. And if you're an experienced investor, or if you're a newbie, come join us. I mean, it's a place to make a lot of stuff personal. And then on top of that, you know, Josiah and I plan on having conferences for this community, and of course, open to everybody. But when we finally have the in-person meeting with everybody, it's going to be like we already know each other for so long, because that's what this community is for, to add value to everyone. And yeah, it's just fun, man. I mean, like I said, real estate is a people business, and that's why we got that community.
Absolutely. So join us in that Facebook group. It's the Daily Real Estate Investor. It's a private group. Jump on Facebook, look that up, request to join. We'll get you in there. We'd love to get to know you. We don't want you to just be a name, a random name on a screen here. We want to get to know you guys. And we will have some get together opportunities, meetups and stuff. And then we also, I got to mention this again, because this is a big deal to me, a big deal to Tony, but we're working on an entity that will allow successful people that have been blessed with some means to do this to join a group. And we want to build a group that plants churches, schools, and children's homes. And that's in the works. We're going to talk about that in depth once we've got it up and going. But we really want to go out and do a lot of good with what we've been blessed with our business activities. So we're not just doing this to stack up money. We want to actually change the world for good, change lives, and really help people a lot. So we hope that you guys are behind that as well. We'd love to have as many of you as are interested join that too. We believe we can do a lot more good together than we can do by ourselves. So on that note, we'll wrap this up. And Tony, if you got anything, if you got anything extra to say, go for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, be sure to subscribe to our channels. If you have a YouTube, please subscribe, hit that thumbs like button. Same thing, follow Josiah Smelser at Josiah. What's your Instagram?
It's Daily Real Estate Investor on Instagram.
And same thing in TikTok, right?
Yeah, TikTok, same thing.
Yeah. All right, and follow me at Ant1234 Moreno, A-N-T-1234 Moreno. And yeah, if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, again, subscribe and hit that love button. That's how we grow.
So. Share the show with your friends too on YouTube. Please give us a thumbs up so more people can discover this. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. We're going to try to have, we're working towards having daily content come out on this podcast channel on YouTube. Should have stuff on Instagram as well, but daily content. So if you want to catch that daily content, make sure you're subscribed. Turn your notifications on so you can catch that when it comes out. We love you guys, and we'll catch you next time.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please connect with me on Instagram at Daily Real Estate Investor or via email at josiahsmelser@gmail.com. My new book titled Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals is out. You can get it either in digital or physical format on Amazon. Once you've read the book, please leave me a review. Tune in next time for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor as we both join in our financial freedom journey.